Accession number 27249, Mr. Tom Tate, reel 4. Now, we're talking about a typical ray, but one thing that's not so typical is you weren't always wireless operator. Sometimes in your log, you and in one part, quite a lot, you were front gunner.
Yes.
Now, what was it like when you were front gunner? And what was your role? What was the environment like?
Well, as front gunner, you were in the front of the aircraft and you saw everything that more or less happened. You saw all the day. Not only did you hear the anti-aircraft fire, but you saw the explosions all around you, close by. Usually, the Germans were pretty accurate. And then, of course, a searchlight would come up and it would immediately pinpoint you. No searching for you, immediately pinpoint you. Remarkable equipment they had to pick you out. And then the pilot, of course, would take his own evasive action. He might lose a lot of height, do a corkscrew as if he was being attacked by a fighter. He would lose height and then he would lift the nose and we'd go back to a little off that course, but we'd go back to the same height, the operational height. And it was a nightmare. On the other hand, while this was all happening, you couldn't be afraid. You weren't frightened. You were more paralysed than frightened. There was little you could do. I did on one occasion when the searchlights hit us immediately, instinctively, I fired my guns, the two Brownings. And although they were pointing down towards the searchlight, I can't say that I directly... Well, I did direct them to the searchlight. I only had a flash, a moment, and believe it or not, that main searchlight went off. And I mentioned that to several people when I got back, and we were at 10,000 feet, which only after all was only about 2 miles high. I'm not sure if the Browning had a range of 2 miles, to tell you the truth, but never mind. By coincidence, those searchlights, the master searchlight went off, and all the others went out for a moment. But it was a nightmare.
Now, you did quite a lot of raids in this period, you know, on Essen, just looking through your log, but Lübeck, Dusseldorf.
Dreadful, yes. The weather was better now, you see, at those times. Especially Essen, short nights. We only got about 3 hours out of it, and we had to do... Operational tour was 200 hours or 30 operations or 200 hours, whichever was the...
Were you very conscious of the length of an operational tour? I mean, did you have sort of mark off the hours or missions or... You know?
My book shows the hours, operational hours there, and the number of sorties all the time, yes.
But did you take an interest? I mean, were you looking forward to the end of your tour?
Didn't think I'd ever reach the end of my tour. Yes, I was looking forward to the end of the tour. And when I came to 36, now, I reached 36, I think, on about the 4th of June, 1942. I think that's right. Or just before then.
Is this the Cologne raid where Shepherd was wounded?
It's just after that, I think. 4th of June...
No, the 6th of April.
Oh, 6th of April.
It's when Shepherd was wounded.
Sorry, 6th of April. Well, no, I'm talking now about the 4th of June.
No, we'll keep it in order.
Sorry, all right. On the 6th of April, no, I had...
Tell us the whole story of that, because I know you remember that was a raid on Cologne on the 6th of June.
Absolutely.
On the 6th of April, 1942. Tell us about that raid. You said you remembered it well.
I remember it well. I remember that that raid on 4th of April, Cologne.
6th of April.
6th of April. It wasn't a 1,000 bomber raid, was it? According to my book, does it say that 1,000 bomber raid?
No.
Oh, well, I remember that raid particularly well because I was in the front turret and... We were surrounded by shell bursts And we went through a terrible time. I didn't think it was possible we would survive. And suddenly the pilot called out and said he'd been hit. Well, he must have been hit by shrapnel straight away. And fortunately, we had a second pilot. That's very unusual to carry a second pilot. But in this case, the man was going on his first operation. And he had to take over the aircraft. That meant getting the pilot out of his seat and the second pilot climbing up into that seat. Now, I was the only available person to help, so I was told to come out of the front turret and give my attention to this matter. And so I helped get the pilot out of his seat, and I laid him on the floor, and the escape hatch is on the floor of the aircraft. I laid him on the floor, and I there was given an injection. I forget what the injection is called now. It's amazing, it's a long time ago, but they give it still today to kill the pain.
Morphine.
Morphine. I gave him a morphine injection. Nothing else I could do. I couldn't take.
Where was he wounded? What sort of wounds?
He was wounded in his shoulder. In his shoulder. And then the second pilot said, after a very short time, prepare to abandon aircraft. Now, that meant to say that I had got to prepare the Shepherd to abandon the aircraft by pushing him out of, opening the escape hatch and then and putting his parachute on and then pushing him out of the escape hatch. And that situation held for perhaps 3 or 4 minutes, and then fortunately the second pilot came back to say that he'd recovered the engine speeds, and the aircraft was now flying safely, and the emergency was over for the time being.
Now, how much damage had been done to the aircraft? What damage were you aware of?
I wasn't particularly aware of any damage at the time, but when the aircraft returns home, the aircraft fitters and those sort of people, the service fellows, they find many holes in the aircraft. Many holes in the aircraft.
You didn't know. I mean,
we didn't know. Didn't know of any. No structural damage, as far as I was concerned. No.
Now, any other emergencies on the way home? I mean, you'd had this preparing to bail out. What happened? He got his engine speed back.
He got his engine speed back. He got his engine synchronized again, and everything went well, and we had no more trouble coming home, as far as I remember. But you see, there are a series of little things that happen all the time while you're in flight, and you don't particularly notice anything unless, of course, it's really serious, like losing your pilot. And that would have been dreadful if we hadn't had a second pilot, because in those days we didn't have a flight engineer who, on the Lancasters, he was capable of steering a course on the Lancaster. Not necessarily a capable landing, but we could have possibly got back to this country and we could have all bailed out.
It says you saw 5 fighters that night.
On that occasion, yes. We happened to see 5 fighters altogether, yes. There was a lot of activity that night, apparently. And
But they didn't attack you.
We weren't approached.
Now, your next pilot was Pilot Officer Frey. Yes, Shepherd was a pilot officer at least by then. Yes, he seems to have been promoted.
Is it appropriate to mention that you asked me what sort of man Shepherd was?
Yeah, if you'd like to talk
about
that.
And I'm saying that I flew 14 operations with Shepherd, 14 operations before he was hit by a shrapnel and finished up in Ely Hospital. Now, he returned to his squadron in due course. And the roll of honour in Ely, Cathedral shows, the records show in the Roll of Honour that he and his crew were lost on the 27th of July 1942, sadly.
So, yes. So, you didn't fly with Shepherd anymore, though, after that incident?
No.
Now, your new pilot was pilot officer, well, you seem to have gone up with Squadron Leader Newton, but then...
Squadron Newton was the flight commander, and he took us, the crew, for the time being, and little duties we would do.
And then you got Pilot Officer Fraser. What was he like as a man? A
very nice man, a tall, kindly, attractive man, a very good pilot, conscientious, remarkably, all the service personnel I have flown with, they all proved to be very conscientious and devoted to making a success of the job, and not having sort of fits of nerves or temper or whatever it is when people panic. They were well chosen people, remarkably.
So any other particular instance you remember while you were flying
with Fraser?
So you seem to be doing Le Havre, Boulogne, Dortmund, Hamburg, Cologne, yes. Rostock two or three times, Paris, France.
Yes.
Cologne, you know.
My tour then seemed to settle down a while, and naturally there were incidents all the time, but we weren't directly attacked. We got involved in flak, anti-aircraft fire, certainly. We got involved in searchlights, but he calmly took evasive action against searchlights. Not that you can do a lot, you must try and get out of the anti-aircraft fire, reduce our height, reduce your height, or even climb further. But that all takes time. Reducing height is something that we used to do. And we had no more trouble, no incidents really.
What about the mine lane? How was that? Was it different?
Oh, mine lane, yes. Mine lane was a bit of a nightmare. We went to Saint Nazaire? I think we went to
Kiel Bay once. Yeah, but there's a variety of places.
Kiel Bay is up in the Baltic, and we roamed around at about 200 feet. We had to drop these mines from a very low height, so we roamed around about 200 feet. Fortunately, no anti-aircraft fire of any account there, just an odd shot perhaps, and so that was fairly safe. I'm not sure if we actually dropped the mines in the end. If we couldn't see our targets, we weren't allowed to drop mines. But we certainly went to Saint Nazaire, and we were cruising around there, and there was always gunfire. There's always gunfire down there, but nothing untoward. In fact, I feel we brought the mines home from San Jose.
One time we did, yeah.
Yes.
The other thing is, there's a big raid. It's a 1,000 bomber raid on Cologne on the 30th of May.
Right.
Do you remember that one?
I remember that because the whole of the RAF and Bomber Harris himself, the commander-in-chief of the RAF, that was his ambition, to put out 1,000 bombers, because his philosophy was that the RAF could finish the war. It could destroy any city as and when it wished, at will. It didn't work out quite like that, because the will of the German people, they refused to surrender, even right at the end, at the very, very bitter end, they refused to surrender. But however, I remember the 1,000 bomber raid, because I was asked to fly with a crew in a Hampden bomber. Now, the Hampden bombers were almost ancient Britons in the war. And I said, well, I would prefer not to. I couldn't refuse, but I would prefer not to. And the commanding officer took a sympathetic view, and he said, I've managed to get a replacement f- for that crew.
Yeah, you were. You seem to have been with your normal with Fraser on that day.
So I was with Fraser.
And that was the 30th of May.
I remember that because it was clear, the weather was clear, and the sky was absolutely full of aircraft. It was fantastic. I think they were all going to try and deliver their load of bombs within about 20 minutes. That was the philosophy. Within 20 minutes. And we lost lots of aircraft. I think about 37, something like that, were lost. But however, we didn't have any nasty incidents of anything. But that was historic. The very next night, we went to Essen, very close by in the Ruhr.
And it's the first, the Essen raid.
Was it? Well,
it's pretty well.
It was the next night, wasn't it?
You've gone up on the 30th,
31st of May, yes.
I think it is, yeah.
It was the next night. One was always a bit resentful about going on an operation in successive nights because it meant you carried out your operation, shall we say, Cologne, and you landed perhaps. You could land about, by the time you'd finished with landing, briefing and all the rest, and your supper, your flying supper, and by the time you got to bed, it was 2:30 towards 3:00, and you were wakened about 7:00 in the morning and told, you're on tonight, briefing this afternoon, and it was a hell of a life, tell you the truth, but that's how it went. So Essen was a failure. As far as success is concerned, it was a failure because the target was covered in cloud. We couldn't see our targets, and especially the industrial haze prevented us seeing the targets. But never mind, people saw some of the target markers. They saw some colours and they bombed them. But you were never sure that those colours on the ground, those fires on the ground, could be decoys, which the Germans were very clever in arranging for decoys.
Now, the next night after that, the 2nd of June, you went back to Essen, and your air screw was down, your propeller, one of the propellers was down. Do you remember that?
Yes, because it was again hit by a piece of flak, and there were the sort of things that happened. They got into the engines and they destroyed your hydraulics. One unlucky shot punctured a pipe, one of the circuits, and you were lost. How we survived that?
You seem to have been on lots of raids on Essen just in that early couple of weeks, first yes. Week and a half in June.
Yes, because the bomber command felt that they'd. They had to concentrate on something and they had to totally destroy it. Sometimes it rather indicates that we hadn't been a success in our attempts to destroy it and we had to go back again and again.
And your last raid of your 36 was on Essen.
Was it? Well, you don't. Lucky to survive because Essen was a nightmare.
As you got nearer the end of your thing, how was your nerve holding up? I mean, in between flights, I mean, you explained what it was like when you were there, you were scared and all the rest of it, but what about in between times, you know, in the day before a raid or the couple of days before a raid?
Well, anticipation was, I was in a state of sheer nerves, anticipation of what the target was to be. Would it be Berlin, for instance? A very long trip, that is, a very long trip. A round trip of, what, possibly 800 miles.
You don't seem to have done any Berlin raids at this time.
Fortunately, I went to Feldwebel as a result of them losing a large number of aircraft. Now, I think it was 7 aircraft they lost on one raid, and Berlin and Feldwebel weren't asked to do Berlin as far as I was concerned all the time I was there. I do wonder if there was something that Feldwebel, the New Zealand squadron, had to forget and they didn't involve them. I don't know, that's my theory, but I was lucky not to be brief to go to Berlin.
Were you able to sleep, you know, in
between? Oh, yes, I slept well, yes. I didn't have nightmares in that way, no.
What about recreations? I mean, what would you do for, you know, when you weren't on a raid?
If I weren't on a raid, well, there was recreation in the camp. There was the camp cinema. There were dances. Certain officers would be invited to out to the local villages to be entertained by nursing homes or the staff of hospitals, and they would make a big fuss of us. That was rather nice. In fact, I became the entertainments officer, and believe it or not, the reason I became I established myself as entertainments officer was that senior signals officer who was responsible for having entertainment officers at hand, his reason, and he told me himself, he did not wish to lose me. When I was saying I was going to go back on operations, I would be posted soon, he said, I don't want to lose you. You are one of the few officers who can keep your hands to yourself. But I said, I've made up my mind to go. John Wynne is going back on operations. And
I think we've gone to that. That doesn't sound like it. I mean, you were on operations.
Yes.
So you were made entertainment officer later in your career, were you?
I suppose at Bruntingthorpe, yes.
Yeah,
and all those.
Sorry. So you weren't at 75 Squadron?
Not as entertainment officer, no.
Right. Okay. So what happened? Was there any sort of party to mark the end of your tour, or was it just another day?
No, just another day. Well, it wasn't another day, really, because I did my 36. I mean, I carried out my 36th operation. I didn't know that was my final, and I think that was on about the 4th of June. Not 4th of June, but what, 7th of June was it in my book?
It's 8th of June.
8th of June. That's my operation. The next day, or within a day, I then did a night flying test with Fraser. I did a night flying test, but the operation was cancelled. And then I said to the flight commander, I've done 36, how many more do I have to do? And the next day he said, I'll see the commanding officer. And the next day he came to me and said, you have finished your tour. You will be posted. And I and my fellow WOP AG both completed our tour at the same time, but the rest of the crew, the other five, had to carry on. They had not done as many operations as us. Now, that's when I got to mention now Fraser, Pilot Officer Fraser. Believe it or not, Pilot Officer Fraser, according to the Roll of Honour, in Ely Cathedral, Fraser, with whom I flew 22 operations, 14 with Shepherd, 22 with Fraser, the Roll of Honour shows that Fraser survived only to the 20th of June, 42, when he and his crew were lost.
So just a week or so later.
Absolutely ghastly news, yes.
Would you know that at the time, or you only find that out, you know?
I have since been to Ely, simply because my five crew have now, in a garden remembrance, Princess.
We'll come back. I just meant you didn't know it at the time.
Didn't know it at the time.
So, what would your next posting be?
And then I was posted, first of all, I would have to look at my logbook to see.
29
I think
operational
I went to
training.
North Luffingham. I think it's North Luffingham.
That's right. And what were you doing there?
Well, I was a general dog's body in the wireless world. That was, I was flying with any pilot who had got to go on an errand of some sort. Either he was, if he wasn't on an errand picking up bits of equipment, he was flying, shall we say, navigators or members of crew, because we were now what they called staff. We were staff. I was a staff wireless operator, so I had a certain dignity in being staff wireless operator. And I accompanied the pilots. They always had to have a wireless operator, a proficient wireless operator, accompanying them in case they got lost.
And you went from Luffenham to Woolfox?
Yes.
I'm not sure where that is. But
well, Woolfox is on the Great North Road, and it was a vast field, a really vast field it was, on the Great North Road, and it was being developed as an aerodrome. All these places were being developed. That's why 29OTU hadn't quite established exactly where they lived.
And so you're just doing these routine duties?
Yes.
Anything else about this period?
No, nothing. These were all rather remote airfields.
This is basically through to October, carried on various exercises.
Yes.
There's some cine camera exercises. Do you remember anything about them?
Yes. Well, if it was the crew, someone of the crew we and the people who were being trained were doing these exercises. I don't think I wasn't doing the exercise at all. No.
And then you went back to Luffenham, North Luffenham again.
Back to North Luffenham, yes, that's quite right. And in time, North Luffenham became an American base.
While you were still there?
No, sorry, oh dear. Yes. No, not. It was being developed in a way. No, nothing particularly happened. Nothing particularly interesting about the place, really.
And this carries on through into January 43, and, you know, the month's passing. Not just routine duties.
Routine duties, always just flying with a pilot at any time.
And still just a sergeant.
Oh, and you're still a sergeant? No, I was in 43, I was a flight sergeant at least.
Yeah, officer, yeah, flight sergeant.
I see what you mean, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Did it make any difference being a flight sergeant to being a sergeant?
No, as I said, we all, I think, in crew, all are equal as far as authority is concerned, shall we say. Each has their own separate trade and skill and knowledge on which all the other members of the crew rely. But after all, the pilot is the ultimate figure who gives the orders, regardless of rank.
Now, the next thing is you seem to move to Bluntingthorpe in June 43, so after a year, basically.
Yes, we arrived at Bluntingthorpe, which was established as 29OTU. It was an absolute new drone, remote country, south of Leicester, remarkably, all agricultural country.
But you're on the same job, though.
Absolutely, yes. Our staff was operating. I flew a nighttime, daytime, nighttime, any time when SPROG crews were practicing for preparing for night operations over Europe.
And is this where you became a recreation officer?
Yes, it was.
And what did you do as recreation officer?
What did I do? Well, first of all, I made myself available to attend, to go to these parties when the WAFs, or perhaps the WAFs sometimes, or the nurses of the nursing homes invited. They used to request the company of a few selected officers for help in the entertaining business,